All right, this is the Happy House Hunters. Looks like we had some Zoom hackers on there. So anyway, good. Bert says we can't rename ourselves. Yes, that's good, because we had some Zoom hackers that were copying Ryan there. So now we'll see. We'll see if he jumps back on. Anyway, we're going to talk about our freedom number tonight. And okay, Ryan's back on. He says, is there any more Ryans? No, it looks like just one so far. So we'll see what happens. Says Ryan, it's grandpa, haha. So I don't know what's there, but anyway, I'm going to let Kyle monitor the chat for those that are on, but we're recording this. And so this is going to go out to our Happy House Hunters group. And we're talking about what is your freedom number. And it's how I found the secret to having passive income. And so first I need to tell you a quick story. I was a single mom. I had two minimum wage jobs. I had no health insurance. I was living payday to payday. I had no extra cash for emergencies. I had a car that I couldn't keep running, and I had no means to save toward retirement. So I was feeling kind of desperate. But then something happened where my mom sat me down and she said, you know, you need to get on with it. And I thought, you know what? I don't know what get on with it means. What do you mean get on with it? And she says, you're going to have to find a way to make more money. Because she said, you're all at this point, I was in my late 30s, almost 40. And so at that point, I thought, you know what, I better get on with it. She really did make a point there, because for, you know, my first 20 years of working, I managed to land, you know, two minimum wage jobs, which I was paying the bills, but I had just enough money if I stretched a little bit that I could cover my expenses, but I wasn't saving any. I wasn't putting anything back for retirement. Well, at the time, one of my jobs, I wore acrylic nails. I remember I had to count my pennies to, you know, to pay for the acrylic nails because of the minimum wage. But anyway, I was hanging in there and I was getting the work done, and I was in an environment where my hands were out in public and like a kind of a sales type job. And so I wore these acrylic nails. Well, long story short, my nail tech, her husband passed away. Of course, I was like, it's all about me. You know, I was like, what am I going to do? Because she says, I'm not going to do nails anymore, you know? And I'm like, well, I really did feel bad that her husband passed away, but I was panicked because I was like, what am I going to do? I got to find another nail tech. And it's really, really hard to, I'm not, can you cancel anybody, Kyle?
Let me try.
Yeah, because we've got some hackers in the call. So I apologize for that.
I don't have any control over it, but Bert is not welcome.
Is it Bert?
Yeah.
All right. We'll see how that goes. So anyway, now I got to get back to where I was here. So anyway, at that point, once my nail tech's husband passed away and she decided that she wasn't going to do nails anymore, I had to go find another nail tech. So I met this nail tech, and this was kind of what changed everything for me, is when I met this nail tech. I don't know why, she was younger than me maybe, but I just asked her, I said, you know, how much money can you make, you know, doing nails? And when she told me, my chin was on the table. I could not believe she was making more in 1 week than what I was making almost in a month. And so I thought, I thought this might be kind of a cool little side gig, you know? I mean, you just sit there and wait for the next person to come in and just eat bonbons in between your manicures and, you know, and make a little bit of money here and there. And so I thought, okay, at this point, maybe I could start making some money as a nail tech, just part-time. And that would make my mom happy, because then I would start making, you know, some savings. I could put some money back for that retirement. So I was working my corporate job full-time, and I was working this nail tech job part-time. And it just seemed like I was racing from one job to the other. But I decided that after a while, I really needed to make the transition. I was making more money working a Tuesday night, a Thursday night, and a Saturday morning doing nails of all things than what I was making on my corporate jobs. And so I decided, you know what, I need to look at this more as a full-time gig. So I went through it and kind of made that decision. So I got on board with this nail salon and I thought things were going well and all things, you know, all things. Now see this, let's just get rid of everybody here on the call and record this. I am so sorry about this. We get Zoom bombers all the time. Sorry about that. All right. So now back to my story. So I decided to make the transition and go from corporate over to doing the nails full time. And so now I'm working along and all of a sudden, the salon that I was in, they decided that they needed to close. They decided, you know, they had kids at home and they decided they didn't want to run a salon anymore. And so I showed up for work one day and the salon was closed after I had made that big, huge leap and made that transition. And so then I thought, well, now what am I going to do? So I panicked and I thought, how am I going to, you know, support myself? And, okay. I don't know how to block him from coming back on. I don't show that I've got any attendees there.
I show that they leave, but then they pop right back in.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I look at the participants, it shows attendee zero on my end. So anyway, so I'm just going to close the chat. So they can chat over there all they want because it doesn't, the chat doesn't get put into the recording. So it won't affect us. So anyway, once I decided that I was going to do this full time and then the salon was going to close, I kind of panicked and I just didn't know how I was going to make a go of it. And so I started looking around and I found another salon, and this other salon, I thought, you know what are they doing different? And this other salon, they were actually hiring what was called booth rent type staff or independent contractors. And they were collecting the rent from the contractors and then they were paying their rent for this storefront. And I had this big aha moment. I thought, you know what? The thing for me would be, why don't I try to buy a building and I could own a salon, I could bring in these booth rent type staff, independent contractors, I could collect their rent, and then I could turn around and pay the mortgage. And in 20 years, I'd have a paid for building instead of renting some storefront in a shopping center. So that's what I decided to do. And so I got busy and figured out and leveraged and managed to get my first salon building. And so from there, I started hiring stylists and nail techs. And I had 12 girls at one point that was working in the salon business with me. And so once I started doing that, then I decided it would be time that I could kind of leverage that. And at the same time, about that time, I bought my own first condo. So I had my own home now, you know, instead of renting an apartment. And I had, you know, this salon building. And so now a couple of years in, you know, I go in about 24 months and now it's, I could leverage again on how I can actually buy a second mortgage and then, you know, a second salon building and then a third and a fourth and finally a fifth. So I ended up in 25 years having five salon buildings. And as I hired staff and my staff paid me booth rent, I could take the booth rent and actually then buy the buildings. And so that worked really well for me for the 25 years that I was in the business. And so I was pretty scared, but very optimistic that I could get a retirement out of that. And that's how that worked for me. And so from there, I started actually buying residential properties. And so I started with just a couple houses locally. And then I took care of my mom and my dad. And once they both passed away, my mom left me her house. And so once I had the ability to have her house, I could take and leverage that and buy three more properties. And so finally, I was at the point with my cash flow that I was able to actually start paying cash for properties. And so my best cute little story on my cash is where I my mom had some bonds that she cashed in and gave to me. And I was able to take those bonds and purchase a little property down at the campgrounds in Lancaster. And I paid $6,900 for this little cottage with this like $10,000 bond money that she gave me. And so when I drive past there today, it just makes me smile because I know that that was money that my parents, you know, my dad had saved, and then my mom had it, and then she gave it to me. And so it was just kind of fun to see that, that I could purchase something like that. So anyway, I want to move forward, and I'm going to get to my notes here on how I calculate my freedom number. So bear with me until I find my notes on my freedom number calculations. So I have a formula that I really like. So here is my formula. Go to your bank accounts and look over the last 6 months of your expenses. And it's what it takes to run your family every month. It might look like this: your electric bill, your cable bill, your groceries, your gas for the car, Netflix, tuition, taxes, mortgage, rent, a few dinners out, a movie. It's the stuff that you spend all the time. So don't cut corners. Let's just, you know, list all of that. Now, let's say for the sake of argument that your number is around 4,500. So don't leave anything out. Don't cut the corners. And so now at about 10% to give you a little extra freedom. So let's just, you know, round that up. Let's just say that you need 5,000 a month. Let's just say that's going to be your freedom number is 5,000 a month. So let's use that for our example. So if you had an additional 5,000 a month coming into your house, you would have everything covered. You wouldn't have to worry about getting all the bills paid. You would say that you would have achieved financial freedom. So you don't need to be a millionaire. The next step is the fun part. And this is how you figure out how many rental properties that it would take to cover your 5,000. Okay, so don't groan. I've heard all the horror stories about being a landlord, but trust me, if you create systems and solutions, you don't have to have all of those problems. So most rental properties that I fix and keep for myself are usually a 1, 2, or 3 bedroom. They have a 1, a 1.5, or 2 bathrooms. They're usually single families, duplex, triplex, or fourplex. And they're in states, usually Ohio, Central Ohio. I've launched out a little further now. I do have a couple in other states. And most of these are somewhere, I started buying houses kind of at the bottom of the market when things were really kind of dipping back in 08. And so I was able to purchase a few houses in the $29,000 to $30,000 range, but all of mine are somewhere between that and $100,000 after they've been rehabbed. But now let's just talk about the rent. So for the sake of this example, let's use an easy rental average of $700 a month. And again, rents are going up, but let's just for example. So if I take the 700 and I want to account for an additional 40% for vacancies or repairs, and both of which are rare since we just renovated the houses. So 60% of 700 is $420. So the worst case scenario we'd be making is $420 per month on the house. So you take 700, you take out 40%, you keep 60%, you're going to put $420 in your pocket. So that's very, very conservative. So now simply take our expenses, the 5,000, and divide it by the 420. We get 11.9. So we're going to round that up to 12. So 12 properties cash flowing $700 minus repairs, vacancies, et cetera, or 420 a month is all it would take for us to achieve our freedom number. So that's pretty remarkable. It only takes the 12 properties. So the first one that I bought, again, like I said, was my condo because I was making the transition from corporate America over to working, you know, strictly in the salon industry where I had renters that was paying me. And so I wanted to buy the condo before I quit my corporate job. So I managed to do that. And then once I wanted to start with the salons, I started with my first building in Canal Winchester, Ohio. And I had 12 staff that was paying me rent, booth rent. These guys and gals were just renting a station there in the salon. And so I had it, ultimately I had a total of 12 in that particular building, and I was just collecting that rent and paying my mortgage and my expenses. And so basically my stylist bought me a building. So that's kind of cool. And then of course I bought that cute little cottage with my mom and dad's, you know, bond money. From there, I kind of leveraged the first salon and I bought two more salons. And the third one that I bought even came with 3 one-bedroom units in the back. So it ended up a fourplex. And so from there, like I said earlier, I helped take care of my mom and dad. And once they both passed, my mom had given me their house. And so I was able, and it was paid for. So I was able to leverage it and buy 3 more single families. And so I just kept adding. And now that the salon staff was paying down my mortgages on the salon buildings and my tenants were paying down any mortgages I had on the residentials, it was time to leverage my equity. And I bought 2 more properties. And so then from there, I thought, okay, now I'm getting ready to kind of retire from the salon industry now that I had my buildings pretty much paid for. And 2 things. One is I thought, what am I going to do with myself? And the other thing I thought was, at some point, you know, I really wanted to still generate some cash flow, and I was going to walk away from all my clients. And so I opened an actual guest house or bed and breakfast in the home that I live in. And so now I own a residential bed and breakfast. And so short-term rentals, that's more immediate income. And so if you're looking for passive income, the short-term rentals is a very, very quick way to make income. And then the long-term rentals, of course, if you have mortgages over time, you can generate quite a bit of cash flow. So to recap, add up your monthly expenses, pad it by 10%. Again, for our example, we used 5,000 was our freedom number. So then you take the average single family rental, $700 a month, times 60%, you're going to take out the vacancy and repairs, which gives you 420. So take your monthly expenses of 5,000, divide that by 420, and you're left with 12. So you need 12 rental doors to achieve financial freedom in the form of $5,000 a month. Pretty cool, huh? When you think about it, especially if you're going to buy a fourplex, 3 of those, and you've got your freedom number, 3 fourplexes. You only need 12 doors. You only need 12 doors. So you need, you know, a few duplexes, some single family, throw in a fourplex here and there. It doesn't take long to get 12 doors. And so once you got to your freedom number, see, that's when then you can start having your freestyle life. You can live the life you want. And at some point, someone says, well, you know, what if your expenses go up? Well, you know, you can, I have a girlfriend, her philosophy is, as her expenses go up, she wants to liquidate her properties. Well, as my expenses go up, you know, taxes are going up, insurance is going up, repairs are going up. As my expenses are going up, I need to simply add more units to offset the expenses, because your expenses are never going to totally outdo the value of your property. So if your expenses go up, add a couple more properties and stay ahead of that, so that you always have that freedom number, no matter what your expenses go to. And as you have your properties over time, you're going to be able to leverage a lot of that equity. And as you leverage the equity, it's easier and easier to get more properties. So anyway, that is how I do my freedom number. And I am going to now look again. I just ignored the chat for a while. So now when I look at participants, it looks like we just have our 4 panelists, me and Christy and Chris and Kyle, and everyone has the ability to talk. Am I correct that everybody else got bored and left? Is that what everybody thinks?
I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, everybody else that. So anyway, so those of you, you all have your microphone and you can chat. So if you have any questions, or let's have a discussion. Christy, what are you thinking about this talk? Have you thought about your freedom number and how you might reach your freedom number?
I never have, but I've never heard it put that well. You know, I've never heard somebody just lay it out there that easily. It doesn't sound that unattainable now.
it's very attainable. And yeah. I know we've got Chris on board with us, and Chris, I see that you're not on the video part, but can we still hear you?
I'm still here.
Perfect. So tell us how you determined your freedom number and how close you are to your freedom number.
Pretty close to how you described it. I do my own budgeting and everything, so it's pretty easy to pull my numbers. I have kids, so I have to look at the long-term cost of that. So I have a little bit different equation, or expenses, I should say, but.
Okay. So you do your math a little differently than me. And how much do you want to get out of each door? How much are you calculating?
Well, I would like to get as much as I can out of each door.
Right.
I go a little bit more aggressive on stuff. I tried to, right until this year, I was trying to get 500 out of each door in cash flow. That's a lot harder to do right now. So I think I'm happier with like 250 per door. And then I also, side note, I also try to get the equity part in, especially in Columbus, since it's going up like 15 to 18% month over month.
Yeah. And so with real estate, you're earning money several different ways. Mm-hmm. Number one, you earn money the day you buy the property, because if you really work your numbers and it's a great deal and it's worth more than what you're paying for it, which a ton of mine, I got them, you know, when the market kind of crashed there through 08, 09, 2010, during that time when the market crashed, there were properties that, you know, liquidated for in the like 36,000 or 45,000, and they were worth more in the 70s and 80s, but they were getting sold in the 30s and 40s. And so I, at the stroke of a pen, you know, I earned, you know, $10,000-$20,000 on a property the day I bought it, because it was worth more than what I was paying for it. So that's the first way you can make money on real estate, is if you can buy something that's worth more than what you're paying for it. So you've got built-in equity. Then over time, equity continues to grow. So that equity is now still adding to your portfolio. Then you fix it up and rent it, and now you've got rental income coming in. And so that is now adding value into your wallet as well. And then at tax time, you have great tax deductions. So you're making money about four different ways on one piece of real estate. And so that's why real estate investing is such a good way to create passive income, because you have all of these great ways to earn, you know, to earn the equity, to earn the cash flow, to earn the rental income, and to take the tax deductions. So it really is a great way to create passive income. Chris, how many doors do you want to have? And how close are you?
I'm probably about halfway, but I would probably like, I think it comes out if I had it at $500 per door, it'd come out to 8 properties. 250, you know, we're looking at a little bit higher, right? What is that? Okay. So it all depends on per door, but inflation right now, that's hurting things.
It is. And the fact that, you know, I mean, just gasoline has gone up. And so therefore, all of your contractors have raised prices because they have to cover their expenses. All of the building materials have gone up. So everything has gone up. So it's put a little bit of a crunch on, you know, how much cash flow you're actually going to pull out of a property when even just doing routine maintenance. I mean, if I have one that has been cash flowing wonderful for years, and all of a sudden I have, you know, a furnace goes out or an air unit furnace combo or something where I have to turn around and spend some money on that property, I'm spending more money these days to do that repair than what I was previously, because the cost of everything is going up. Not to mention, for those of us that have properties already, you know, the whole air conditioning scenario where, you know, they're not making the same Freon anymore. And so you can't even buy now the parts to fix some of these old units. You have to buy new, you know, because they've discontinued a lot of that. So anyway, long story short, it is a little harder to cash flow. But again, if your cash flow starts to shrink, you simply need more units cash flowing at that lesser amount, see, to get to your freedom number. And you can do that over time because you don't have to do it all at once. You can do that over time because like with me, once I bought the first building and then it gained some equity, now I could leverage that equity to buy another building. I had a girl ask me the other day, she goes, when is it a good time to buy real estate? And I said, the best time to buy real estate is as soon as you're able to buy some. Because I don't care what you pay for it today, 20 years from now, it's going to look great. You know, I mean, think back 20 years, you know, we were like, oh boy, I remember when interest was in the double digits, mortgage interest was in the double digits back in the 70s. And my first property, when I was 20 years old, my then husband, we decided to get married. You know, we met when we were 18, we decided to get married by the time we were 20. And so we wanted to buy this little house, just a little, I don't know, 800 square foot, one bedroom house. And interest rates were in the 14% range in the 70s. And we finally were able to, you know, interest was just starting to come down and it got down to 9%. We were so excited to have a 9% loan. It was like unheard of to have a loan that low. And then here recently with our crash, if for those of you that are into real estate, which most of us on this call are, and what's happened is interest rates went all the way down into like 1.5%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%. I mean, you know, it's so 9% seems high, but it wasn't in the 70s. It was very, very low. And so I say, buy whatever you can buy as soon as you can buy it, because time is your friend in real estate. Real estate is the long game and time is definitely your friend. And it doesn't matter if you pay it, you know, an interest point or two higher than what you think you should be paying, because down the road, it's still going to be great. And it doesn't matter if you overpay for the property a little bit, because down the road, you're still going to have, it's going to grow in equity, it's going to grow in value, and it's going to far exceed that overage that you paid at the time. So it's not like a car. If you overpay for a car and now the car's depreciating and you've overpaid, you're upside down in this car loan. With a house, it is really hard to get upside down in a note, because time, it just takes time, which is, you know, for it to be right side up. So I remember when the market crashed and folks had mortgages up here and the market crashed to their properties down here, and their actual financial plan, which is what put all of those foreclosures out on the market, their financial plan was to walk away from that loan, because they could walk away from it and they could buy the exact same house for this price. And their loan was this price, but the values on their properties dropped and they didn't want to be tied in. It was going to take maybe 10 years for that to come back up here. And they didn't want to wait the 10 years. So a lot of people, their actual financial strategy was to walk away from those loans. Even if they didn't lose their job, they decided to walk away from the notes, from the loans. And so foreclosures were just everywhere. Well, for an investor, that was like heaven, because now all of these great properties were priced down here. The banks didn't want them. The banks just wanted to get them off their books. And so at that point, the banks were almost giving away properties. And I got several because of that. You know, because of the crash, I got several properties. I was just, you know, at the right place at the right time, and had the wherewithal and the sense to kind of see what was happening. I didn't know that if we were at the bottom or not, but I knew it was better than it had ever been. If you were an investor, it was a great time to start buying. So I was able to grab some properties. So anyway, Chris, tell us a little bit about what you're working on currently and how you're working toward your freedom number. And then we're going to get Kyle in here to tell us a little bit about the market.
Yeah, sure. I'm working on a property on 22nd. It's a full rehab property, you know, plenty of hiccups along the way and stuff. Gonna try to build it up and rent it out, try to get some cash flow in, and that area is appreciating a lot. So one of my goals there is to get the equity out and maybe buy more properties with it, use that leverage it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Christy, you're in the actual real estate industry every day. You're working in the industry every day. What are you seeing out there?
Well, recently I've started to see a few price decreases and a few longer days on market, which gives me hope, because for a while it was nothing but prices selling for way more than what they were worth.
Right, right. And yeah. In practical terms, that means that you were upside down in the property because you were paying more than the value of the property.
Yeah.
But over time, you know, that property was going to come up in value and it was going to far exceed what you paid, and you were, and it was going to be an okay deal. I say all the time that the only difference between a bad deal and a good deal is a few years.
Well, that's good. That's good.
You know, because you can make what you think is a bad deal this year. You know, you're thinking, you know, this is the only thing that's on the market. I'm going to grab it. I'm going to overpay for it. But in a few years, it's a good deal. It's a great deal because, you know, nobody, you couldn't buy it for that, you know, down the road.
Right.
Even if you overpaid today. So I get that. And so you're seeing that things are softening a little bit as far as price.
A little bit over the last few weeks. Now we'll see if that continues.
Okay.
But that's what I'm seeing. A little bit. People are kind of coming back down to reality, I think, a little bit.
Very good. Kyle, can you chat with us? Can you turn your microphone on and chat? Tell us.
Can you see me now?
Yep. What is going on with the market out there?
Well, with the interest rates rising and inflation and everything, that's mostly affecting, you know, entry-level buyers and first-time buyers. Anybody, and they define now entry level as anything under 300,000. So that's
Christy went, oh,
that's what they define now as entry level, is anything under 300,000. So that's the buyers who are mostly being affected. I haven't seen in any of my personal listings or any of my personal buyers much change. And looking at the MLS market, and it's showing that we still only have 3 weeks of inventory, which, if for anybody who doesn't know, 6 month inventory is considered a healthy market. And we are at 3 weeks of inventory. The market, the MLS reports are still showing that most things across Columbus are still selling at 1-3% above list price.
Okay.
Even though days on market has increased slightly, not by much, just a few days, buyers are taking a little more time, a little more precaution. They're not rushing in with huge appraisal gaps and appraisal waivers as strong as they were. Now, some markets, because, you know, real estate is very micro markets, especially driven by the school district. Hilliard and Dublin are still absolutely white hot crazy right now.
Yeah, I believe that.
Some other areas, you know. You're probably seeing on the news that the market is cooling or changing. Again, that might be a national report, but here in Columbus, things are still really hot. Things are still have gone up on average across Columbus about 15% so far year to date. Last year, it was about 20 to 22%. So we have cooled off, but they're still going up.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. So how are the investors able to find properties, Kyle? And Christy, you're always looking for.
I can't.
You can't find
any. No, I'm having a very hard time finding any properties that meets our like buy box.
Right.
You know,
right.
That meets where we want to be in a deal. I'm struggling.
Yeah. Kyle, yeah. How are you at finding properties?
I'm working with some investors. We've made some investment offers lately, you know, at or even slightly above list price, and we've gotten beat.
Yeah.
Wow.
People are paying up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, if it's going up 15%, you know, if you overpay by 10 or 15%, you'll recoup that in a year or less anyway. So it's still very strong in Columbus.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting. Because I did a lot of my buying. I couldn't buy fast enough when the market dropped back, you know, through the 08, 09, 10, even up through 12. I was still buying, you know, as soon as I had enough liquidity or equity, I was grabbing whatever was hitting the market, and just built up my portfolio rather quickly. And then it did get harder to get into that price point that I always wanted to buy in. I was kind of like, what? And so I finally reached my freedom number. And so now I can relax a little bit. Now, I'm not saying if a great deal came along, I wouldn't grab it. My latest one is you know, I had been looking around the Columbus area. I wanted to get into more short-term or midterm rentals, and this condo popped up and it was on the market for less than a day. And I immediately grabbed it because I'm constantly looking at real estate. So I kind of know when it's a good deal and this one was going to be a good deal. And so I had some equity from, I had a line of credit on some equity on another property. So for all practical purposes for purchasing, I had cash because I had this line of credit. And so I just immediately made a full offer, cash, no contingencies, and grabbed it and got the property. And so now I'm trying my hand at midterm rental, and this is my one and only midterm rentals. And so I put it out on Furnish Finders, and the property came with a long-term renter in it. And of course I wasn't going to rock her boat, but I told her, I said, she says, well, I'd like to move down to the Carolinas. She says, my children have already moved, they're adults, kids, and my grandkids. And she said, I want to move. And she said, but I haven't found a place yet. She said, but I'll give you, you know, a full 30 days if I do. Well, she did. And so I knew that I wanted to try this midterm thing. So I said, by the way, I said, what are you going to do with your furniture? Because her furniture was really nice. And she said, I don't know. She said, it's going to cost me an awful lot to move it. Why? And I said, would you consider selling it? And she goes, well, yeah. And I said, well, put together a list and let me know. And she did. And I bought her entire condo full of furniture. We're talking leather couch. We're talking kitchen set. We're talking a queen size bed, brand new. I mean, everything she had in there was less than 24 months old. Washer and dryer, everything, $1,500. Wow. I know. And so I put it out on Furnish Finders as a midterm rental for like traveling nurses or corporate rentals or whatever. And the first gal that called me, we talked back and forth, and, you know, she saw the pictures and she was kind of interested, and I'd never done a midterm rental before. And I'd done short-term, you know, well, if you're renting short-term, like an Airbnb for a weekend or a hotel somewhere, you don't go look at it first. I mean, if you're going to travel to California, you don't go to California to look at it before you decide what you go online and you pick something and you book it. Because you figure, yeah, whatever it is, I can live with it for a couple of days or however long I'm there. Well, midterm is a little different because folks are staying, you know, maybe 8 weeks, 12 weeks, or, you know, they renew their assignment, maybe even longer. And so I had not done it before. So I thought, well, she was like, I like it. I want it. Where do I sign? I said, okay, let's meet and I'll get your signature in the first month and you're good to go. And then she said, you know, I think I'll pass. And so I said, well, just out of curiosity, I said, this is our first midterm. I said, may I ask why you decided to pass? And she said, there are so many scams right now that, she said, I'm already working in the Columbus area. And she said, and I'm staying at a place that's kind of expensive. And she said, I just feel that I don't want to get scammed. I just have to make sure it's a legitimate place. I said, well, you want to see it and meet me? And she goes, well, yeah. And I said, well, I'll do that. And she goes, she says, nobody else wants to do that. So I thought, aha, note to self, put that in my Furnish Finders ad that viewings are available. And so they can meet me and actually see the unit. Because a lot of folks, they're already in the area, working in the area, and they're looking for a long-term place. So anyway, long story short, she came over to see it and she barely got inside the door, saw the setup, because again, this furniture, it's leather furniture decorated nicely. I told the gal that I bought it from that was moving, I said, don't change a thing. I said, and she says, I'm leaving you my curtains, my pictures, everything. I said, don't change a thing. I said, it's perfect. And so this gal that wanted to rent stepped inside on the, you know, just inside on the entry mat. And she looked around and she said, I'll take it. Handed me an envelope, you know, with her first month, which on a midterm rental, you can get about twice what you normally get out of rent because you're renting it fully furnished. And so she handed me, you know, the $1,500 and because I showed it before the other gal actually totally was gone. And then the next day I was doing the walkthrough with the gal that was leaving and I simply took the same $1,500 and handed it to her for the furniture. So I didn't have any out of pocket at all that weekend. And the gal was there for 12 weeks. And so just now she is moving on. And I just signed another midterm rental agreement with my second renter. And he didn't want to see it. He goes, oh, I trust you. I'm like, okay, so everybody's different. So anyhow, and he gave me his cash today. And so now she leaves on June 22nd and he comes on June 26th. So I'm going to have four days that I won't make money on it, but I'm getting twice the rent and the furniture is now paid for. So I'm getting twice the rent, what I would normally rent that for in that area. So now I wish I had like four or five of them, but so I've got my eye out, but I don't want to get, again, I think you have to be smart and I don't want to get kind of overloaded in condos because I know that the condo, the whole HOA rules and regulations can change at the stroke of a pen with, whoever is in charge of the condo association. And so I don't want to get in too heavy in condos and then at the stroke of a pen for them to say, you no longer can rent even midterm. This particular HOA says as long, it's a minimum of a 30 day. And so I put that right in my ad for my midterm rentals is that the first 4 weeks is non-refundable. You know, they get it for a month, whether they stay or not. And then after that, one of the big questions and one of the big problems with short-term rentals is a lot of these traveling nurses, they get a stipend from the hospital or medical center, wherever they're working, to rent these short-term rentals, and they get an assignment of so many weeks. Well, sometimes the hospital calls the assignment short. Sometimes they extend the assignment. And so that it's the person renting doesn't know. They don't know if they need it for more weeks or less weeks or whatever. They just don't know. And some of these folks that are doing midterm rentals are just saying it's a flat so much a month and you got it for the month, even after the first month. And so I thought, how could I attract more folks to mine? And so what I did in my advertising is that number one, I said they could see it. I learned that on my first gal. Then I said only the first 4 weeks is non-refundable. And after that, they go on a week-to-week lease agreement. Okay. And so all they have to do is just say, okay, I'm leaving, I'm done. My assignment got canceled. Because what happens as soon as they, I mean, this is their income for their families. So as soon as their assignment ends, they start screwing around looking for another assignment. Well, their next assignment might be in Cleveland or it might be in Cincinnati. And so they don't want to be tied into my unit for a whole month if their assignment got canceled. And so that's why on a week to week, they're only at risk is a week's worth of rent at any time. So I'm getting, I suspect that I'm getting a lot more inquiries than the average midterm in Columbus because I paid attention to what the issues were. I saw the problems and I wanted to show up with the answers. And so I suspect that I'm getting more inquiries for that because I get like 10 a day.
Wow.
And I'm like, boy, do I wish I had like 10 more of these.
Yeah.
But anyway, and again, I don't know if traveling nurses, and again, when I say traveling nurses, it encompasses the whole medical field. Not everyone that is inquiring is a nurse. So some of them are estheticians. Some of them are anesthesiologists. It's all different fields in the medical field. It's all different capacities that are traveling. And they're making big money and they're going to ride that train as long as it's on the track. And I'm going to ride that train as long as it's on the track. And at any given time, I could rent this out long-term and call it a day. Or I could put it back on the market. I could just call up my favorite Kyle and say, put this back on the market. And I have a feeling it wouldn't last long. So it's a win-win. Mm-hmm. I just think there's just so many different ways that you can have income in the real estate industry. There's just so many different ways. So thoughts or conversation about that? Anyone thinking about doing a short-term or midterm rental?
I do have some information on condos. You mentioned, you know, you didn't want to get too heavy in condos. The HOA can change the rules on you. with little notice. But, you know, beyond the HOA, there are other factors happening that's affecting condos. After that collapse in Florida, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have changed their guidelines. And if anybody doesn't know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they buy mortgages on the secondary mortgage market, and they've changed their guidelines for buying condos. There's a new question they've added to their questionnaire asking about the foundation. Uh-huh. And per the lenders I've been talking to, a lot of HOAs are kind of not wanting to answer that question because it's going to open them up to liability. But if they don't answer that question, then the condo association no longer qualifies as conforming and won't qualify for conventional lending. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts out there with condos, not just your HOA. So that's something we're dealing with this year, is this new conforming regulations for condos from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Wow, that cannot be helpful.
Well, now, again, it's helpful. Believe it or not, it's helpful if you're an investor.
Oh yeah.
If you're a first time home buyer and you're looking to buy a condo and you need to have it FHA or something like that, then it's not helpful. But if you're an investor, it's helpful, because if you can go in with cash and you don't need, you know, an FHA loan, for example, you know, you can buy up a lot of those condos, especially if the association, they don't want empty units. And so now they're going to set their guidelines to try to basically survive. You know, they want these units sold. So I think that maybe, and again, I don't know the backstory, but for whatever reason, the association that I'm in, that this condo that I own is in, they decided to accept rentals as long as it was a minimum of 30 days. They didn't want the Airbnbs where you had somebody new every weekend. They didn't want that. But they said as long as it was at least 30 days, you could rent it, and it didn't matter how many times in the year that you did that. Now, the one I have in Florida says it has to be a minimum of 30 days, but I can only rent it 2 times a year. And so, which is kind of perfect down there because it's snowbird territory, and snowbirds want to come for 3 or 4 months. And so you rent it to one couple for 3 or 4 months, you rent it to another couple for 3 or 4 months, and then use it personally the rest of the time. So it's actually, you know, just about perfect to rent it a couple of times. But in both cases, they're just saying those are the minimums. So both of them will accept a long-term renter, somebody that just lives there and that's their home. They're just a renter, and they're just signing a year's lease, and then it's going to go month to month, and they could stay for years. And so both complexes allow long-term rentals. And so that was my deciding factor, is if I decided I didn't want to work that hard on short-term or mid-term rentals, I could always just turn it into a long-term. And then it just becomes another passive income property like the rest of my long-term properties. So I have options, I guess, is my point. But that is good to know, Kyle, because you don't see it as much here. I mean, these are the Cardinal builds. If anybody knows what the Cardinal builds are, they're the little prefab units, and they did apartments and they did condos, and they had Cardinal builds all around Franklin County, and they're all just one story on a cement slab. So foundation issues aren't an issue for these condos. But when you get to Florida, where you've got, you know, 12 stories or more, you know, you start getting that's, and if you've got all that weather coming in, it is built on sand, you've got all of those factors in Florida. And so I can see that being an issue in Florida. And again, if you're an investor, and if it's a property that doesn't want to maybe do the work, do you really want to buy a unit in there? I mean, at some point, they're going to have to make some decisions, you know, mm-hmm. to make sure that the building is safe.
Yeah.
At some level, you know. So we're in, down there, we are not on the beach. We are back on the mainland, so it's not as sandy as being out on the beach. We don't have the weather hitting us as much as you do if you're out along the shoreline, and ours is only 3 stories.
Okay.
And so we felt pretty, and they're still qualified. They must be doing all of their right certificates, because they're still qualified for FHA, all of those type loans. And I was able, there was a different kind of loan, and Kyle maybe, or to Christy, maybe one or both of you can explain this. I had to qualify for, I wanted it to support itself. So I said, I don't want to use my cash. I want to get a loan on this one. I kind of wanted to get a footprint in Florida and get to know a lender and, you know, kind of make some relationships there. So I said, I think I'm going to get a loan on this one. And it's not an FHA, but it was the same requirements. And it's for owner occupied vacation property, where the criteria was it had to be 100% owner occupied for the first 2 years. Then I could do whatever the association allowed me to do, which is rent it twice a year.
Okay.
And so I don't know what kind of a note that actually is, but it's considered a vacation homeowner. It's homeowner vacation property.
And you got your loan in Florida. With the lender in Florida. Okay.
Yes.
That may be something they have.
It could be.
What a great program.
Yeah. And so are you guys ready for this? My entire holding cost on a one bedroom condo right in Sarasota is under $500.
Oh my goodness. Good for you.
That's the mortgage, the insurance, and the association fee. All of it together is under $500. Yeah.
Good for you.
And so it wouldn't take much to rent that to really have a nice cash flow there.
Right.
Yeah. So, and our 24 months is over this coming December.
Okay.
Our first year was December to December. And so now we're, you know, halfway in this year. So once we get to this coming December, we'll be there 24 months. And then we can decide if we want to use it part-time as an investment.
Good for you.
So anyway, so interesting stuff. All right.
Always.
Yes. So any questions? And again, just between the four of us, any questions at all? I'm glad that, you know, the rest of the group decided to move on. The Zoom bombers finally moved on. So Chris, are you still out there? We know
I'm still here.
Very good. Any questions, comments?
No questions, no comments.
All right, Christy, how about you? You good?
I'm good. Yes, ma'am.
So was this informative? Did it help?
Oh, very.
Yeah.
Very.
Yeah. And we're going to post it. So it'll be informative for anybody that wants to listen to it. And what I might do is where we had the Zoom bombers at the very beginning, I might see if I can trim a little bit and maybe not, because I got off of my presentation, two or three times there trying to figure out who was on first. So anyway, but thank you guys for being here. And for those that are listening later, I post this in the actual Academy site for those that want to listen later. Christy is my co-mod on the free meetups for the Happy House Hunters. And Kyle is actually my co-mod for the Boots on the Ground and the actual mastermind group. And he helps me with the group where we dive a little deeper into the real estate on how we get things done. And so this Thursday is a Boots on the Ground. So any news for us yet, Kyle? Properties move so fast, we have to wait till we get closer to the date to see what's going to be open.
Yeah, I usually got to wait to within a day or two to try to line something up because, yeah, they're still moving like hotcakes.
Okay, good to know. All right. Well, I am looking forward to seeing everyone on Thursday, and we'll see everybody later.
Thanks, Kathy.
Okay, bye.
Bye.